morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans.
Good morning. This is we're on Democratic Perspective this morning. We're here once again on a Monday morning. This is what we do. This is everybody looks forward to this little drive time show at 8:15. And I'm sure they're archiving it at Homeland Security for that reason. But this morning we're going to talk about mental health, certainly a subject.
A lot of our listeners have got to be psychiatrists.
Well, yeah.
doing
yeah,
studies.
Yeah, Democratic Perspective on the Couch. That'll be a new book coming out soon. But seriously, folks, we are going to talk about certainly a subject close to my heart, and a local group has done something about it. We've talked about this on the show before. We're talking about the Mental Health Coalition of the Verde Valley, and we've had guests from Phoenix and other places talking about some, but this is, we're really going to kind of zero in this morning. And we got a couple of guests in the studio. We have Barbara Luttrell, who's been in the studio before and talked about various subjects. We're calling her the facilitator of the Mental Health Coalition of the Verde Valley. And we have Judy Maloney. Good morning, Barbara. What's going on?
Good morning. It's great to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, it's great to have you. Judy?
Good morning.
What's your role with the Mental Health Coalition of the Verde Valley?
I've been working with the Mental Health Coalition for a year, and I'm predominantly a family advocate. So I have a sister who my husband and I have been the caretaker of. She has gone from schizoaffective schizophrenia to paranoid schizophrenia. And she's lived with us 25 years ago for about 2.5-3 years. She's been in and out of hospitals and was here for about 2.5 years before we had to move her basically to Massachusetts.
I see.
Due to no real facilities here to take care of her.
So
there are not many facilities anywhere, actually.
Yeah, there's not many facilities anywhere, and especially in rural areas, the resources available are very, very limited.
So the lack of resources is one of the things that got this going.
Well, no, that's how I got involved in it. And we had a forum a year ago where there were a number of people within Northern Arizona, within Sedona, that participated in a forum. And we pulled together the head of NAMI and also the head of, at that time...
NAMI
is the North America Mental Illness Alliance.
Northern Arizona, I'm going to bet.
No, it's North America. Yeah,
we
have
a national
Alliance of Mental Illness. And we do have a chapter here, which is phenomenal and supported me for 3 years. While my sister was here, because they actually have something for families. They have a session twice a month for families who are dealing with mental illness.
As Judy mentioned, about a year ago, there was a statewide conversation, because this is the limited resources are not an issue just in Northern Arizona. The limited resources, we know, are a national issue as it relates to mental health, but in Arizona, it's a state issue. And so about a year ago, actually it's almost a year and a half ago, in September, there was a statewide conversation put on by the Arizona Humanities Council, and they had a panel in Phoenix that was live streamed around five different community colleges in the state. Yavapai College participated. I facilitated that particular evening, which involved watching the panel and then having a local conversation. Judy was part of it. Mm-hmm. There were about 35 people there representing professionals as well as individuals whose lives are affected by it. I mean, there were people there whose children had committed suicide and they didn't know where to turn at that time. And so at the end of that meeting, you could tell that people said, okay, now we've identified that we've got issues. What are we going to do about it? And that's when the Mental Health Coalition Verde Valley actually started and has been meeting once a month since then. and has developed, well, you saw or you have a whole list of our accomplishments.
I do have your list of accomplishments. I want to look at them. Go ahead.
And so we have a list of accomplishments because we wanted to do some things in 2014 that would be the most useful and practical at the moment. And that included putting together a list of resources.
Right.
And so the group put together a 32-page guide to the resources available to you in the Verde Valley, which includes some in Prescott, some in Flagstaff. But generally speaking, it's a lot of what is in the Verde Valley. And that is online at our website, MHVC, Mental Health Coalition, MHCVV.org. And you can get the whole list there. And then we have a couple of other things that we accomplished in 2014 also, including the expansion of the Mental Health First Aid Program, which is a fabulous program done by Spectrum Healthcare.
Repeat that title.
It's called the Mental Health First Aid Program.
Okay.
There are two of them. One is Mental Health First Aid.
Uh-huh.
The other is Youth Mental Health First Aid, because we have lots of issues dealing with young people.
Yeah.
Or that young people are dealing with and their families. And so the Mental Health First Aid Program is a program where experts, professionals from Spectrum Healthcare will do a full day's training at no charge in order to have you understand what the symptoms are for mental health issues and ways that we as lay people can help someone. And, you know, it is not that we are then taking on a professional responsibility from a behavioral standpoint, but it's very much like, you know, if you were having a heart attack and I administered CPR,
right,
or if you were bleeding and I gave you a Band-Aid,
yeah,
what can we do?
Well, isn't that, just quickly, Spectrum, is it fair to say or accurate to say that they are the mental health contractor here in Arizona?
There's a former
they run the clinic?
Guidance clinic or guidance center out of Conwood emerged.
Yeah.
And so I was going to point that out, that it's, for people that aren't familiar with the name, it's the former guidance.
But they run others besides the one in Conwood.
That I don't know.
Oh, okay. I don't know. I thought that's why I'm wondering if they're the state contractor.
Not a state.
I don't know if they're a state contractor. They're a private organization.
Yeah. Got it.
And I'd like to point out a couple of statistics real quick.
Yeah, sure.
Just to kind of, you know, help people understand that the mental illness is probably the most underreported illness in the world, probably, and certainly in the country. And, you know, if you look up I was trying to find out the statistics for the numbers or the percentage of people that have mental illness. And in the only statistics I could find were several years old, and they claim 5% of the population is mentally ill.
Yeah.
That absolutely can't be true, that 4% of the population is sociopathic.
There you go.
And so that's only one form of mental illness. So you know, it's one of those things that people don't want to talk about, that the victims of the illness don't want to talk about it generally, and the families often don't want to talk about it. So it's something that we really need to help with and make it not such a bad thing to admit.
It should be part of the big conversation. We like to make, we made jokes because I think we're uncomfortable. But go ahead.
That's actually one of the first things that we took on as a coalition besides the resource guide, because, again, given the stigma about it, it's really difficult to be able to find the kinds of things that you need related to that. And also, just in general, it's just not something that people want to speak about. And so one of the things we're really interested in doing is the community education and having people realize it is a large number. You're saying 4 or 5%. I think it's one in four
people in their lifetime will experience some form of mental illness.
Yeah.
So
that would include depression and schizophrenia and bipolar.
It could also include an eating disorder. That's where the definition is much broader.
Right.
And PTSD, and, you know, there's a whole raft of illnesses that, that fall under mental illness.
And there's a huge increase in the PTSD, especially, you know, not only in terms of the veterans. My husband himself is a Vietnam veteran, but not only in the veterans that are returning from the wars now, but there's an increase in the incidence of PTSD for the aging population of veterans. So,
and this isn't, the PTSD seems to be a fairly new term, but you know, I was watching a program last night, a history of Korea, and talking to veterans, you know, recently of Korea, that have gone all of their lives since the time of their service in the war, until they opened up for this documentary. They didn't, you know, realize they had any you know, residual issues with it. And suddenly the tears just started streaming, and all of this grief started coming out. So it's something that's easily repressed, and we just didn't talk about it.
That's a good diagnosis, and it explains a lot of veteran behavior. I'm a veteran also from that time period, but I didn't serve in combat. But it is a good diagnosis and helps. And so I think that you're seeing more and more treatment for things that they didn't have a name for.
Yeah. And one of the ways to seems to be a good way to address it, or at least to get them to open up, is I have a friend who was a Vietnam veteran who repressed all of his issues until he wrote a book about it.
Right.
And in writing the book, he just, all this stuff started streaming back, and so the act of actually putting something on paper or on a recording is often a way to draw the
military is one thing. We have a lot of veterans here because we have a VA hospital in Prescott, in part. This area has always had, I think, a kind of an outsized number of veterans to the population, but. It's become cliche to say that the largest mental health facility in every community, but certainly in Yavapai County and Coconino County, is the Yavapai County Jail and the Coconino County Jail.
Yes.
Sitting here in Sedona, we kind of talk about both of them. The largest mental health facility in the country is the L.A. County Jail.
That's right.
That's something wrong with that. And thank goodness for people like you that recognize that. But I want to ask, if you guys, I know you haven't been up for very long, how effective, how good, how receptive is the Yavapai County Jail people, authorities? How receptive are the, because I've had some experience with this. I have a family member living in Cottonwood that's mentally ill, and I'll give a shout out to Alex because he might even be listening. And but how good are the law, how good is law enforcement and mental health treatment?
Well, it's hard for us to judge that because we're not operating in the jail. However, you know, we have to ask ourselves, and this is what we've asked the sheriff. You know, we've had two recent forums in this area where we talked about, it was prior to the election, because as you know, there was a jail tax to be voted on in the November 4 election. And we had a forum where the sheriff was talking about the tax and why we needed it, why we needed more beds. And we were there to be kind of a counterpoint, to ask, do you really want to be the mental health facility in this area?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So we shared with him some of the statistics in and around the number of people that are in mental health facilities that, I mean, in jails that have a mental health issue, and it is as high as 65%. Of the people in the jails that have a mental illness.
Wow. And I'm not surprised, but wow.
Nationally, that figure is in the hundreds of thousands.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
And besides the numbers that are in there, the programming is limited. And then they also have the highest recidivism rate in terms of returning. And our sheriff here has done an incredible job of one aspect of it in terms of having their funding be available for them to be able to continue their insurance. So one of the issues would be that when they came into jail, that their insurance would be cut off. And so therefore they wouldn't be able to maintain their
treatment.
Their treatment while they were in jail, and then it would take a period of time when they came out of jail. And our sheriff here got together the 15 sheriffs in Arizona and actually passed 14 out of 15 to have that funding sustained.
To continue Medicaid, or in our case, access.
Absolutely.
While they're in jail.
Because what happens now, when they go into jail, they go on to the jail health system.
Right.
And then when they come out of jail, there's no follow-up for when they have to wait a period of 30 days to get back on access if that's what they need. Sheriff Masher, Scott Masher, who's our current sheriff, has been absolutely...
Yavapai County.
Has been totally receptive and is working with the coalition now.
That's great.
On putting together... We would like to see a model program in Yavapai County.
Wow.
I mean, our coalition has been examining programs in other parts of the state and the country. When you look at Pima County and Tucson, they have a program down there that creates a mental health task force. So when you have someone who is in mental health crisis and a family member calls the police, it can escalate into something very unpleasant.
Right.
But down in Pima and Tucson, you don't just have the police going on that call. You also have the mental health professionals.
Wow.
And so you can really de-escalate a situation and create a situation where someone doesn't have to be dragged off to jail.
Exactly.
They can be helped.
That's enlightened. It's enlightened behavior.
It's enlightened behavior. And we're really excited that Sheriff Masher is interested in working on developing something in Yavapai County that will be that kind of a model. So this is, I think... You know, certainly I think the coalition has raised the level of awareness and has opened the dialogue with the sheriff's office.
Sure.
So when we look at, and this is only one aspect of mental health, which is the mental health that is being dealt with in the prison system or the jail system. For us, it's the jail system. For the state, it's the prison system.
Right.
But, you know, that's one aspect of mental health is what's going on in the jails and how are we going to deal with it. And when you have a jail, we tend to think of it as it's over there.
Yeah.
And it's not touching home.
Right.
And if we can really adopt this as a community, then we can improve the community support services that will help people when they come out of jail. So that's, and it's exciting to see that there is major receptivity, and I really am hopeful.
That is exciting. I just real quickly, we're talking to Barbara Luttrell and Judy Maloney from the Mental Health Coalition of the Verde Valley, and you know, just the fact that there is a Mental Health Coalition of the Verde Valley is very exciting and certainly newsworthy. And to hear that, that to get back here into the story here that that Yavapai County Sheriff is. And I'm going on history. I'm not talking about individuals. I don't know anything about Scott Masher. But in the past, the department has reluctantly found themselves, I guess, would be fair to say, at least the, in the mental health business. And they resisted mightily. But the fact that they're embracing it and even, I mean, the model program in Yavapai County, and in some people's minds, don't always go together.
since this program is called Democratic Perspective, I'd like to point out that that what happened to our mental health facilities across the country occurred during the Reagan administration, where they cut the funding for mental health institutions. And as a result, the only place for the for many of the victims is in prison. And too often today, even if they're mentally ill, too often they don't have access to their meds, they don't have access to therapists, and too often they're just put away in solitary confinement. And if anything would make somebody mentally ill, it would be to put them in solitary confinement.
Yeah, I wouldn't last a day. It would be horrible.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I just wanted to speak a little bit to that because one of the issues also is that, you know, living in a place like Northern Arizona, we may have psychiatrists and doctors here who also don't take insurance. So again, you need to be somebody that can afford the price of that. Also, in terms of the facilities, again, it's limited in terms of how insurance will cover any of that. So the place that essentially that my sister ended up going to, it cost anywhere from $10,000 to $30,000 a month. So that's no small amount for someone to be able to live with the kind of treatment that they need. It's not saying everybody needs that kind of a thing, but it's basically saying that there's a huge gap between what's available for people and then what they can afford.
And well, I think, you know, tying into what you said, Gary, about, you know, when it happened. And the plan at that time was that, you know, they would get rid of these mental institutions. I remember at the time I was in New York and, you know, some of them closed. And it was one of those things where they had planned to have it be brought back into the community. But like everything else, it was an unfunded mandate. And so, you know, nothing really happened in the community. Some communities had small services and things like that. And to think it has taken this many years for it to come back to the community level. During all this time, the prisons became the places,
right,
and the jails. And fortunately, you know, and the sheriff has pointed it out, for many people, this is often the first time they're diagnosed with having a mental illness.
They're often in jail because of their mental illness.
Well, it may prompt a behavior that causes them to go to jail.
Right.
And it's the first time they're being actually evaluated, because they do go through an evaluation and an assessment. And they are put on a treatment program. So for some of them, that's been a lifesaver. But when they come back out, you don't have the community service follow-up,
right,
that can help them. So if we can begin to look at how, and communities around the country, I mean, Austin, Texas, started a program with a community support services behind the jail. So when they were let out of jail, there was a specific program. It's a, and I guess Yavapai County has a reentry program that they're working on, but it's not geared specifically toward mental health. But when we look at it from a mental health standpoint, there are programs around the country where the communities have now stepped up and are realizing there is a way that we can make this better. And that's what we'd like to see here in Yavapai County.
And if it was not mental illness, if it was another, you know, serious illness and they were let out of prison or out of an institution, there would be almost automatic follow-up for those medical conditions. But in this case,
exactly,
it's not.
Exactly.
It's one of those things people just don't want to talk about. They don't want to fund. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll throw out another statistic real quick, is that this is from 2002, is the most recent I could find. Mm-hmm. The associated annual direct and associated cost for serious mental illness in the United States is $317.6 billion with a B. Mm-hmm. And that's both, you know, indirect and direct. And so this is a gargantuan problem that we need to address and find ways to help people and keep them out of prisons and jails and to find them the help they need.
And that raises a really good point, because to keep them out of jail, has to be the goal.
Yeah.
And so when we think about our community, you know, the jail is one aspect of the mental health illness.
Right.
But there is the human aspect, the family aspect, people who never end up in jail, who are still experiencing various forms of mental illness. And we have to be able to educate people about it. So the coalition has three committees that are working.
Uh-huh.
One committee is education. And the education committee is working on ways to better inform our citizens about mental illness, to remove the stigma of it, and to really treat it, you know, just the way you had drug addiction. And for a long time, people said drug addiction is an illness, and you try to get past the stigma of it,
right,
so that you can get people the help they need. And the same is true with mental illness. We have to be, and very often mental illness, drug addiction, and all of these things can sometimes go together.
Absolutely.
But we have to be able to educate people so they recognize the signs and have earlier intervention for people. Whether the education committee is looking at how to work with other organizations in the community, to work with the schools, to work with the faith communities, mm-hmm, in order to have more and more people knowledgeable about this through the Mental Health First Aid Program and other education programs. So education is one area. Advocacy is another area, and advocacy is a lot of what we're doing relative to the jail,
right,
and to state policies, because we would like to see this expand well beyond that. So we have the education, the advocacy, and another group is looking at community support services. So we can see whether there are things. In fact, I think it's Wednesday, we have a meeting over at a new place in Cottonwood called Steps to Recovery, mm-hmm, which is a home that has been founded by two former drug addicts who wanted a better life. And now they are helping people who are addicted.
I went to their yard sale the other day.
Did you? Okay. And so we're going over to look at it because you do have people with mental health issues who are also addicted and could qualify for this. So he spoke with us. I can't remember his name. Oh, is that terrible?
Sorry.
But he came to our meeting. Every meeting that we have, we have someone come to speak to us about another program going on so that we can be, as a coalition, well-informed.
That's a great program, and I wish them luck. As this is, Mental Health Coalition of the Verde Valley, the whole idea of having an organization that coordinates all of this, you know, there's so much between home and jail, and Cottonwood had a wonderful facility, the Mingus Center. At least I'm going to use the word wonderful in connection with a lockdown mental health facility, but sometimes when you need a lockdown mental health facility, and then of course the county pulled all of their share of the funding, and then there was just nothing left to keep it going. Right now they turned it into a senior daycare, but I'm not sure how long that's going to last. But you had an item here. I'm looking at your list of accomplishments. I want to first of all remind listeners that the resource guide can be found on the website. MHCVV.org is some good information on the website, including your steering committee and I suppose act as a board of directors, and Barbara and our guests today are on that committee, Barbara Luttrell and Judy Maloney. But I'm looking at you talked about a suicide prevention hotline for Midgley Bridge and coordinated the installation with ADOT. What's that about? Speaking of local landmarks.
Well, Yavapai County, and I don't have the statistic here, but Yavapai County has a high suicide rate. And one of the things that, you know, and I'm sure even reading the Red Rock News, you see from time to time that there is a suicide that takes place at Midgley Bridge.
Right.
And I don't know why. I mean, you know, whether it's... Obviously, it's the location or whatever.
Well, like the Grand Canyon, it attracts maybe something.
And so when our group got together, one of the women, Jan McFarland, who is a psychologist as part of the group, Jan said, you know, we were talking about suicide as a really important issue related to mental health.
Right.
And one of the women who had attended our meeting originally had a daughter, that was where it, I guess, came from, had a daughter who came to visit her from out of state. And the daughter came here specifically to commit suicide at Midgley Bridge.
Wow.
And she didn't know what to do and how to stop it, and she didn't stop it. And we thought, and Jan suggested that, you know, there are other places like San Francisco by the Bay Bridge and
sure.
so on,
yeah.
where they have signs that, you know, are helplines. And we thought maybe that's what we need at Midgley Bridge. And to just put up a sign that has a crisis hotline phone number
right.
that people can call.
Right.
And we have been working with ADOT and the Forest Service in order to get the sign up. I mean, it's a little bit of a bureaucracy,
yeah.
but we are working our way through it. And we are hoping that by the end of the year, we will have a sign up in two or three places around Midgley Bridge that will have a hotline on it, a crisis hotline. It says suicide crisis hotline.
Yeah.
And it will give you the number for the Spectrum Healthcare crisis hotline. And there is always someone at the other end of that line who can speak with you, who is a trained counselor. And we're hoping, I mean, you know, these are small steps.
Yeah, no, yeah.
By taking small steps, you hope you can impact one person's life.
Yeah, I was going to say,
more.
If you just save one, it's worth it. I'll throw out another stat. That's
yeah,
kind of
yeah go
goal.
Ahead.
The suicide rate nationally is above 11 people per 100,000. So it's a fairly significant, you know,
yeah.
in my view, a significant rate. And far too many of them are the result of problems that could be solved. You know, a lot of these issues, I think you could look at mental illness and the military we talked about.
Two veterans a week, Bob. That's the last, I saw that statistic last week.
Look at drug addiction and other addictions and then throw in poverty And they're all linked together in many ways. And, you know, as was mentioned earlier, that the cost of treatment is so high for some conditions that, and even the cost of the prescriptions, for things like bipolar or whatever, it's a disincentive to seek treatment. And so, you know, there's this tendency to not take medications and, or not be able to afford them. And it's one of those things, you know, are we going to address something like this? You know, all of these issues together, are we going to give another tax cut to big corporations and the wealthy?
Yeah, the funding is woefully lacking. I mean, it's criminal. The kind of that we don't accept these issues. And I, as soon as the women here started talking, poverty, you know, we've had 3 or 4 or 5 shows on poverty in America. Sasha Abramski and has done some wonderful writing on that topic. And so much of this, I know, is tied into poverty. I mean, is there, you know, is there's, you know, the lines get blurred, you know, between you know, the chicken and the egg, that where these issues come from. But the resources that are your organization is marshaling for the mentally ill is also, I'm sure, with few exceptions, a carbon copy of what you need for poverty.
And we shouldn't leave out the impact of depression. Uh-huh. You know, depression is a huge problem, especially with men in their later years. You know, once they get past 50, I've had several, you know, friends or acquaintances that have committed suicide because they were woefully depressed. You know, they no longer felt as important or needed as they had previously. So, you know, that's another form of mental illness, and it's one that's relatively easily treated comparatively.
Yes. Well, I also think that what's really great about, first of all, thank you for having us here, is that sometimes, too, even how we talk about it, it's like mental illness, it's at a distance. And I think if we can open it up to realize that, first of all, even calling it mental illness, the vernacular is what we're also working on,
right,
which is mental health. And if we really take it on as a mental health, from a mental health perspective, that starts having us look at everything from a very different perspective, and we won't keep it as arm's length. And increasingly so, whether it's Alzheimer's, whether it's dementia, whether it's the issues that we're dealing with in our mental health, that's what I think we want to really start to create for ourselves, because calling it a mental illness puts it at arm's length, and having it be about the jails, or having it be about, you know, the number of people that are street people, the people that live on the streets, a large number of them are have mental illness. But what I would love to have us see is that, you know, we're really committed as human beings to the mental health of each
right.
other.
That's an excellent point.
Yeah.
You know, thinking of it in terms of wellness,
yes.
you know, as we
yes.
do with physical health, yeah. you know, we're finding more and more as we go along, one of the big issues with the Affordable Care Act and with Medicare is to focus on wellness issues, annual, you know, checkups, do preventative measures. And if we could do the same, you know, get the same mentality, you know, it's been tough enough to get it with physical, you know, wellness, but to get it with mental wellness, if we could get to that point, we would cut down that $317 billion.
Well, that's it. It saves money, just like the ACA, you know, Obamacare, having a wellness component saves tons
billions,
of money,
billions, yeah.
billions in the long run. And the same thing here. You guys talked about early diagnosis for mental health, and that once again would save money. I want to touch another, what I'm going to, in this whole, you know, obviously mental health is always touchy, I guess, to talk about. But kids, young
shouldn't
people.
Shouldn't be.
We shouldn't be, and that's what we're trying to help out here, and you guys are doing your bit to educate everyone that this is just another health condition. But young people, adolescents, you know, once again, it's cliche to say that all adolescent behavior is aberrant and in need of mental professional help. But so I don't know. Have you gotten into that yet? Has your group dealt with some of the?
We have not yet dealt with that. We have that as part of our program for 2015. Is an effort to work more closely with the schools and with the restorative justice program.
Oh yeah.
As well.
We've done a show on that.
Exactly, and you know that's why this is so big.
Yeah.
You know, it touches every area of our lives. I mean, when you say one out of four people are going to experience mental health issues at some point in their lives,
right.
You know, this is not a small, small situation. And so when we look at the schools, one of the things that we did in 2014 is we wanted to have more of the educators trained in mental health first aid. And so we made a specific outreach effort to the schools for a couple of the programs that took place this past year, and they attended. And so that was a beginning. And on our agenda for 2015 is to reach out to the schools again and to try to see, because there are programs actually around the country in schools that are aimed at mental health by addressing the mental health issues. And that's something I think that we see as very, very important, because teen suicide is a huge issue. Behavior is an issue when you look at, juveniles, and you look at, if you're convicted of something early on, it carries with you the rest of your life.
Absolutely.
And how tuned in are we in a community? You know, it takes a village to raise a child is not a cliche. And it may sound cliche, but it's really true, because you really need more than just the family. Everyone needs a lot of support.
Well, the bully, and then, like you said, everything is touches so much else. Mm-hmm. I mean, the bullying issues, becomes a mental health issue. The gender identification, that they go through can become a mental health issue.
Absolutely.
Because it isn't always handled with as healthily as possible, and can fester and become something much larger with kids. I mean, these are all not necessarily things specific with kids, but certainly bullying and some of the
also the violence with guns and things like that. That's become an increasing issue among youth. And one of the things, also the other aspect I'm on is a committee I'm on is having Sedona be an international city of peace. And we actually are focused on that kind of programming in the schools and how to bring about compassion and peace and, address those kinds of things among the students in the schools. Because especially around violence and bullying, that has become a huge, huge issue.
With one of the issues I think that makes it, that complicates it some, is a lot of suicides are not classified as suicides, especially when you start talking about teen suicides. You have suicides where, someone just drives their car into oncoming traffic, or they drive it off a bridge. Mm-hmm. And often they're not, it's impossible to tell whether it's a suicide or just an accident. Mm-hmm. And so it gets classified as an accident. Mm-hmm. I had a relative that is suspected of having done that. So there are all sorts of issues that are difficult to identify and to get a complete look at the picture. The other thing I'd like to point out is that every insurance, every health insurance, should have a component for mental health, and I don't think they do. I know when I owned an ad agency and we had about 35 employees, we decided to add a mental health component to our insurance program or benefits program. Mm-hmm. And I didn't think it would be used. Maybe it says something about me that so many did take advantage of it, but we got reports monthly of how much usage the program got, where people used it to go see a therapist, and these were young people. These were, everyone was under 40. Mm-hmm. And I was astounded by the usage of that program. And that should be just an automatic with every health insurance program.
So that they actually used it.
Yeah, we got a list of the number of access points or times it was accessed, and how many hours that was used. We didn't get a report on who was using it. That was all anonymous. But we got a report on how much it was used. And it was astounding. I never felt better about, you know, paying for something. It costs virtually nothing compared to the overall health benefits program. But I never felt better about spending money for employees than I did for that.
That should be a goal for all of Arizona, that every company in Arizona should be offering that, I mean, on a statewide basis. I just wanted to add one thing, because in looking at the overall picture of, you know, what all of this means, and Judy referenced violence and the mass violence in a number of places, you know, you have a kid goes in with a gun and shoots up a theater, and, you know, 100 people are dead and so on. That is what, now we had the coalition, which came out of the Yavapai College conversation that took place a little over a year ago. But almost at the same time, you had a task force that was being formed at Christ Lutheran Church after the Newtown, tragedy. And here in Sedona at Christ Lutheran Church, the pastor said that he was hoping that they could do something to create a safer community. And so in order to create a safer community, they set up a mental health task force. And we've now all become one under the Mental Health Coalition Verde Valley. Mm-hmm. So the bottom line for all of this is to create a safer community by taking care of the needs of our community members.
I see two or three people from Christ Lutheran on your steering committee.
Exactly.
Is there anybody else you want to mention? Now, who's this? Could you identify this pastor? That's fine.
Phil Billiam is the key person at Christ Lutheran.
Right.
George Kruger was the other one. Together, they are the ones that formed the task force at Christ Lutheran.
Right.
And George Kruger has now moved out of state, but Phil is still a part of it. And there are several others from Christ Lutheran, George Kaiser and a few others who have stepped up to the plate. And many of the people on that task force have wide experience in policy making and in community activity related to mental health.
I see.
I was not to sidetrack this, but I would like to point out when we talk about one in four people having mental illness,
and sometime in their life,
and when we talk about, you know, depression and all these other issues. And when you think about, you know, young people taking guns into theaters and schools and whatnot, think about the prevalence of guns and the accessibility of guns with all of those people that have serious mental health issues. It's utterly frightening. And so the answer to all of the gun violence isn't necessarily to, you know, take away guns. You know, certainly they should, you know, in my view, should be restricted.
Improve mental health.
But mental health should be a big part of that conversation.
Well, one of the things I know that health professionals talk about, a difference between, and this is what we're talking about here too, a dark night of the soul and a chronic condition. Mm-hmm. And when we're talking about jails and we're talking about educating mental health, is one of the things will be that those differences. This morning we got Barbara Luttrell, we got Judy Maloney from the Mental Health Coalition of the Verde Valley talking about a fairly new organization, especially as far as Sedona standards. Please check them out online.
MHCVV.org.
And are you looking for people?
Anyone who is interested in becoming a part. In fact, at every meeting, practically, we have someone new joining us.
All right. This is Democratic Perspective. We want to thank Democrats of the Verde Valley. I want to thank Democrats of the Red Rocks for their support and help. Please check out our website at bvid.org. This podcast and other podcasts at bvid.org. Thanks a lot.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.